Hello and welcome to the first Literary Loitering of 2020, a new decade of this. Yeah, think about that. Yeah, not good, is it? We are the Geek Show's dedicated books and arts and culture podcast. I'm Graham, and this week I've been joined by Andrew.
I was the disappointed sigh.
Sarah.
Hello.
And Rob.
That was a very dulcet hello.
It's good to marry you if you have those.
Full disclosure, I'm slightly hungover. I started drinking on the day after the election.
I didn't stop.
No. I'd given up for like a decade before then.
Oh, wow. That's some lowered stamina.
Yeah.
Boris Johnson, bad enough to get you to fall off the wagon.
Honestly can't cope.
Well, at least we have lit light.
At least we have lit light. And I'm pleased to announce that some of our show faves have been quite busy over the holiday period.
Oh, is it me? Am I one of the show faves?
Andrew, you should know that if I introduce someone as having been busy doing things, it's not going to be you.
Right, that's not my MO at all.
I was busy doing things during the break. I was busy dying.
Yeah,
I was horribly, horribly ill.
That's not fair. I was busy doing things over the holiday.
Mm.
Pokemon.
Nice.
That's a thing. See, we've been so productive.
I had to work while I was dying. And I hated everybody because everybody was drunk and having fun. And they were playing Christmas music everywhere. And all I had was this tiny window, and I was glaring out of it at people. I made them fight for their taxis. I basically turned getting a taxi into gladiatorial combat.
Yes, yes. And then that night, we were visited by three spirits of Christmas past, present, and future.
And none of them have had any influence on his behaviour whatsoever, listeners.
Yeah, I don't do that a lot, you know, the thumbs up and thumbs down.
No, we've had some people who we've covered on the show before doing things over Christmas. Some of them I'll briefly fill in. Maurizio Catalan, he of the Golden Toilet fame.
Aha.
He was covered everywhere for his major new work. I forget the exact title, but it was a banana gaffer taped to a wall.
Yes.
Okay, first of all, excellent. Second of all, Graham, you should not have left such a long gap between the creator of the Golden Toilet was covered... by the media.
See, I can't hear Golden Toilet now without hearing I've got a golden toilet.
So yeah, his art banana was eaten, everyone.
That term, art banana. Just chips off the tongue so well.
I know this story as well. It was a
It was another artist who did it, I believe.
A performance artist.
Yeah,
who called it hungry artist.
Oh god, that's even better than just some vando going sweet wall banana.
See, this is the thing. Any kind of any 90s gamer who's played Streets of Rage knows about the wall chicken and the wall food.
Yeah, Streets of Rage taught us bad lessons about what we do when we find food on the streets. It was not as bad as Castlevania, though. It's like, oh, this perfectly cooked turkey in an abandoned gothic castle. Surely no bad will come from eating this.
So, yeah, there was a bit of Catalan news. Peter Handke, the joint winner of last year's Nobel Prize, was finally asked about his support for Milosevic. And he said it is not the right time to ask these questions. Presumably the right time would be when there is absolutely no risk of me losing the Nobel Prize for Literature because of the answers I will give. However, we are going to start 2020 with a story about Karl Ove Nausgaard, who you will remember last year decided to cancel the production of a film based on one of his pieces because he just thought, yeah.
Oh, is this the one who was worried it was going to be too interesting?
Yeah, that's the guy.
Oh, Carl.
I'll be honest, his surname, when I first heard his surname, I was reading the Redwall books and It just made me think, Mouse Guard, is that a Redwall book? Is he, what's going on?
Well, that's been extra, as a huge problem in this last election coverage, hasn't it? With everyone talking about Labour's red wall. Is it guarded by anthropomorphic rats or something? What's going on?
But enough about, oh no, wait, no. Jeremy Corbyn's gone, isn't he?
Yes. Well, gone, but still there, I guess.
So basically the same as when he was in office.
Yes, but no, we're going with a bit of knob guard to start us off. There has been a story which he has been tangential to, I will admit. He's not at the centre of it, but in his epic and unfortunately named six-volume memoir, My Struggle, he used the real names of his multiple ex-wives. And everyone, I'm sure we're all staggered to find out Karl Ove Nausgaard has multiple ex-wives, right?
Or one.
I'm staggered by the getting married in the first place.
How much did he have to pay them?
It's possible that he just invented them and they came true. And that would make me respect him as a novelist a lot more.
Either that or he's a VIP member on that Russian Brides thing.
Well, the first in his lucrative franchise of ex-wives, the William Hartnell of Karl Ove Nausgaard's ex-wives.
Oh, God, that's an image. William Hartnell in a dress.
I'm sure there's an early Carry-On film where it happens.
Oh my God, can you imagine the wedding? Just lifting up the veil.
What? I do? His first ex-wife, Tonya Arsland.
Seriously?
Probably not pronouncing it right by pronouncing it how I want to. She produced a video documentary called Tonya's Version, wise for going with that part of her name, I think, which detailed her experience of involuntarily becoming a character in her ex-husband's novels.
I suppose it's better than Arslan's exploits.
Did it also go into detail about why she attacked that other ice skater with a crowbar?
His second ex-wife, Linda Bostrom Nausgaard, has also written a book called October Children, which is about becoming a character in her ex-husband.
I mean, I'm very disappointed in her for not naming it Like a Bostrom.
That is such a good name.
It's getting to the point where you have to question whether the Norwegian literary industry is all former wives of Karl Ove Nausgaard publishing response novels.
But it turns out
there are other books published. In 2016, the Norwegian author Vigdis Hjorth published her book Will and Testament about a woman who revealed that her father sexually abused her as a child and was ostracised from the family as a result. Now, this was published as a novel. The lead character is called Bergliot, and it was commonly thought to be a work of fiction until the Norwegian daily Aftenposten, I'm enjoying this story, can you tell? Aftenposten revealed excerpts from private family documents of Hjorth's had been transplanted verbatim into the novel, opening up the question of, is this a novel or is it, you know, a memoir? Well, Hjorth's sister Helga Hjorth, who has a much better name and should have become a writer based on that.
It's got that alliteration.
Yeah. Has just published a novel called Free Will about a woman called Nina who is shocked when her sister publishes a novel about how her father molested her as a child with Nina as a character in it. Can anyone in Norway make stuff up?
I have a question.
Hmm?
What's with all the response novels? Can they not just say, oh, look, I mean, what happened to just suing somebody?
Also, I'm now incredibly worried about all the Scandi crime dramas I watch.
Yes.
Sorry, I can't, I've been watching far too much QI. I can't hear Scandi without thinking Randy before it.
Oh my god, Scandi Toxfig. That's been there all these years and I've never gone for it.
I mean, we are commonly told that Britain has unusually tight plaintiff-friendly libel laws. Maybe this is what happens in a country that doesn't have them, that you can't sue anyone. You've just got to respond through writing novels instead. It sounds like hell, to be honest.
I mean, can you imagine it? You read the book and then months later, your response...
yeah, take that. 7 months later.
So are we now going to get a book by Karl Nausgaard about a man whose ex-wife writes a book and makes a radio show about
his inception in novel form?
The important point is he would name that character Sonia Bumface.
Yes, I think that's a perfect note to move on personally. We are being light on news stories this week because we have no less than four book reviews coming up at you later on, but we couldn't resist mentioning this before we get onto those. Neil Gaiman's 2013 novel The Ocean at the End of the Lane is getting a TV adaptation, and it's being adapted by Simon Pegg.
Ooh.
Mm.
Should be interesting.
That should be good.
Pegg was speaking at a TV conference in London, who announced that he and his longtime co-writer Nick Frost were working on this and an adaptation of Harry Harrison's 1967 science fiction novel The Technicolor Time Machine.
Really?
Yes.
Ooh.
Mm.
I like Harry Harrison.
Yeah.
I like Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Mm.
But which is better? There's only one way to find...
And are you talking about Simon Pegg and Nick Frost? Are we talking about making them fight in the arena?
Oh, no, I'm talking about Simon Pegg and Nick Frost tag-teaming Harry Harrison.
That just sounds wrong.
welcome to Literary Life Reading After Dark.
It looks like The Ocean at the End of the Lane is going to be the first thing off the starting blocks, not least because in a piece of fabulously shameless clickbait, Radio Times, where I read this article, ends their piece with "All About Ocean at the End of the Lane, News, Photos, Videos and Full Episode Guide," which I'd say is a bit much for a show that hasn't shot a frame of film yet.
But somehow
it's ambitious, isn't it?
Yeah. Somehow they've got the full episode guide.
Yeah.
Which, to be honest, last time I looked at one of these, it was basically just a chapter list from the book.
Then you just click on it and then 7 months later they'll get it to you.
Maybe Radio Times have this Technicolor Time Machine that we're discussing. You can't disprove it. You probably can disprove it if you try hard enough.
You can't prove that something doesn't exist.
I think I hear that a lot, but I think this might be an exception to that rule.
I
think
I don't know. We'll get to the proving whether something exists or not later on.
Yeah.
So, yes, shall we move on to reviewing Christmas? Listeners, if you think Christmas is hard, at least you don't have to review your gifts in front of the people who gave you them.
What I most liked about these socks.
Actually, yeah, I think that's a point we have mentioned, that this is... possibly the first ever that we are doing live in person.
Yes, that's true.
Yes, we're all in
the
room.
With the four of us, we did used to record it with us all together.
I'm not sure. Did we use that before I came on?
No, we did it in the office. We recorded a few of them in the office.
Ah.
Yeah.
Because you used to sit near the window.
Maybe. Anyway, this is the first time since it became a good podcast.
Since we had the power of Graham and Sarah added to it.
Yes. So who wants to go first with their present review?
I'll go.
Okay.
Because, you know, in the spirit of Christmas, I have a book about it. Sarah kindly gave me The World of the Unknown, Ghosts, or The Osborne Book of Ghosts, with a foreword by Rhys Shearsmith. I'll be honest, the name rang a bell, and then I had to look him up. Even though there's an introduction about it, there's a foreword at the beginning, and if you go onto the Osborne website, it tells you who he is. So,
or if you go onto Wikipedia, yeah,
Yeah.
That's why I Googled it. But anyway, this is the reprint of the original. Mm. There's almost no updating of this. And you can tell that when you're investigating ghosts, doing the ghost hunting, and it mentions tape recorders and things like that. And everything is just so low. I mean, look at that camera. Just look at it.
It's a proper, like,
it's got a little
camera.
Cube flash on the top. You used to plug them in and then they would sort of, you know, get spent and you'd dispose of them.
Oh, God. And the electronic equipment that you use.
What is that?
That's an oscilloscope.
Is it? I can see the screen. Yeah. Oh.
It's lost a bit of its luster now that it's just to bring up the oscilloscope app on your mobile phone and look at the ghost.
But also other essential equipment for ghost hunting, a pen and paper.
Excellent. I'm familiar with
this. A tape measure.
A thermometer. And a cotton reel.
Yep.
What?
A thermometer. Everyone knows a ghost's one weakness is mercury.
this is one of those things where if you're an adult and you look and you're reading this now as a full grown middle aged man, I'm looking at it, I'm going, yeah, I know most of this stuff now, but this isn't a book designed for me. This is a book designed for kids.
Mm.
Oh,
this is their first step into the world of the occult. And I'll be honest, this was one of my first steps into the world of the occult as well. And it just brought back so many memories. This is one of the reasons why I like horror and dark fantasy as much as I do. I love this. I loved it when I was a kid. And I still love it. Thing is, when you read it, it's very matter of fact, right? Everything is very matter of fact, and it's kind of informal as well. You can tell they've put a lot of effort into it, but
I used to love the fact that it was really colourful and it didn't give, like, there was lots of pictures, which is still, listeners, a bonus when I'm reading a book. And you could get a little sort of pint-sized introduction to things.
That's why Andrew and I read comics.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The colourful pictures. Well, yeah, the colourful pictures in this are great. I mean, you've got all sorts of strange customs, where ghosts gather, phantoms of the sea, unlikely ghosts. I mean, it goes into detail about Black Shuck, who...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The village with a dozen ghosts, ghosts around the world, which is a slight introduction. And then ghost hunting and more ghost stories explained. Clever fakes and sense or nonsense. A glossary of ghost lore at the back with doppelgangers and all sorts in.
Hang on. There were quizzes in this. I think we've worked out what we're doing on future shows.
Ghost quiz.
Yeah.
Ghost quiz could be done.
Ghost quiz.
But yeah, if you have kids who are about seven, eight, nine, upwards, and they're interested in ghosts, or they're interested in something spooky.
Or they're a Scorpio.
You're pushing him hard before we get onto the new age segments of the show, aren't you?
That caught me completely off guard.
Scorpios have their birthday around Halloween.
Right. Is that still the case since the constellations have moved, since those...
The present signs? Constellations, yeah.
Is that the present constellations?
Not the oldie-worldy ones.
Right, okay. See, Sarah knows better than I do. But anyway, yeah, get this for your kids.
The Usborne, the world of the unknown ghosts.
All about ghosts.
All about ghosts.
Excellent.
Yeah, so I guess that book's there to help if you have any pressing questions with regards to the occult.
Well,
so say I'm at home and I go out for a little walk in just the surrounding area, and I notice something. And I think, oh, that's a bit peculiar. Who should I call?
Not me. But yeah, it might not answer all your questions about ghosts, because there are more varieties of ghosts and supernatural occurrences than, you know, we've had hot dinners. But the basic stuff, it'll cover the basics. It's enough for a child. It's not enough for a full-grown man. I want more. I want more knowledge. I want to know the ancient rituals for summoning Kaha.
Thank you, Rob.
Well, in terms of wisdom, I think the present I got from Rob is pretty hard to beat. It's what I lick before your face and other haikus.
It's still the best title.
It really is a very good title.
And I think it's important to finish this title before anyone gets the wrong impression, and Other Haikus by Dogs. It's by Jamie Coleman and, more importantly, Dogs. It is full of images of good boys, some small, some not so small. For example, this one.
Oh, he's teeny weeny.
He's a tiny dog.
He's adorable.
A bulldog.
Such a small
just a bulldog?
Dog.
Teeny tiny dog.
I could literally put him in my pocket.
Yes.
Oh, do you know what I recently discovered?
Yeah.
How was it? You know, the Pekingese?
Yeah.
Is one of the breed of dogs that's most genetically related to the wolf.
Really?
Yeah.
That tiny little dog?
Tiny wolf.
Well, that is a pretty good segue, because I thought, rather than review this book, because it is what it says. It is a book of haikus written from the perspective of dogs with photos of dogs. And, you know, if you like that, you're going to like it. But rather than review it, because I don't think it responds terribly well to my toolkit of literary analysis, I have selected six haikus that I particularly liked. And the first one, which you've reminded me of there, Rob, is called Names. Just give you a second to light the joss sticks and start up any ambient music you might have playing here.
Do you want me to make some whale noises in the background?
I will buy you a drink if you do.
He's limbering up. It's an ambulance going past.
Yes, the well-known ambulance whale.
I suppose
it was a Pokemon, Ambula Whale.
It's probably a Pokemon. There's a lot of them.
If there's a nurse shark, there's got to be an ambulance whale, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Checkmate, Darwinists.
Yes. Names is the first one I'd like to excerpt. Within me lies the blood of a million wolves. You named me Fluffy.
Oh, that's awesome.
Some of them are genuinely insightful. Standing runs. I sometimes feel bad that I don't get as happy whenever you sit. Who's a good boy is as follows. I no longer know if you're being genuine or rhetorical. Some give you some genuine insight into the world that I think you could only get from a haiku writing dog. For example, the haiku conspiracy runs, this whole cat-dog thing is only happening on television.
It's true.
Yeah, wake up, sheeple. Going to the park runs, forgive my distrust, but the last time you said the park, someone took my balls. But I think that the one I'd like to end on displays, I think, the deeper literary sensibility beneath this project, and, you know, that exists in the minds of dogs. Generally, I think dogs are well-read. We know this to be true. It's a haiku called Howl. I saw the best minds of my generation lick each other's bumholes.
Oh, that's amazing. Those all beat the one. I haven't read this. The only one that I saw, I only saw a couple of samples.
Mm.
One of them was that friend one. I can't remember.
Let me see if I can find friend. I'll tell you what. Someone else review and I'll see. Oh, hang on. I think I've found best friend. Yes. Yeah. The definition of friendship must truly be you, a bag, my poo. It's true, because I have often wondered what dogs make of the fact that the supposedly superior species on the planet is so obsessed with bagging their turds. It's not what I'd call civilized behaviour, but Yeah, there we go. What I Lick Before Your Face and Other Haikus by Dogs by Jamie Coleman.
It's the kind of book where if you're feeling a little bit down, just pictures of good boys with haikus by good boys.
Yeah, it does seem absolutely delightful.
It really is. Yeah, I like this a lot.
So, my turn. I've been reading the book that Graham got me. It's The Land of the Green Man, A Journey Through the Supernatural Landscapes of the British Isles by Caroline Larrington.
Ooh, it kind of goes with mine then.
It does indeed, yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
In fact, we've even got a few things in common because this also mentions Black Shuck.
No way.
Who is one of my like favourite folklore things. Because, I mean, especially in this, you get like a whole chapter where it's like, ooh, the fairies and like, their deep lore and like whole other realm of being, and then there's a dog, but it's bigger than a normal dog.
Do you know the irony, right? A while ago on 4Panel, I offered this to Andrew and Mick. I said, right, we've got this. It's called Black Shuck. It's a graphic novel about Black Shuck.
Yeah.
Was that not the show when I went on like a 10-minute rant about Black Shuck?
Yeah. Because I reviewed it and then you went off on one.
Because they even specify in this, it's a dog the size of a calf. Which, I get it, yeah, that's big for a dog.
Yeah.
Just compared to like literal giants though.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, this book. So this is, it's actually very similar to that Borderlands book, Graham, that you mentioned a while back and also loaned to me.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of, each chapter is based on sort of a topic or a theme. So like chapter one is sort of myths of the land, how various landscapes came to be. And a lot of that is just giants chucking rocks at each other. And yeah, so it's taking that theme and then looking at like a wide selection of stories and saying like, here are some prototypical examples. These are a lot of the common themes.
Yeah.
Which I think is definitely the best way to handle it when you've got something like this, where there's literally hundreds of stories, all of which are broadly the same.
Yes.
Although there are some exceptions, like Wade's Causeway in Whitby.
Yeah.
Apparently that was made by a giant called Wade. And Thunder is him basically working with his wife. They were both builders. Fortunately, only had one hammer. So what they would do is just chuck the hammer to each other.
Solid plan, no drawbacks.
And yeah, it's just chock full of delightful things like that. I've mentioned that. I already mentioned that there was a bit about the fairies and, you know, them stealing people away to fairyland / other world.
Yeah.
Stealing children.
Changelings.
Indeed. And yeah, I've just finished the bit on Black Shuck. And the next chapter's on Herne and the Wild Hunt, which I'm very excited for.
Oh, yeah. Do you remember Robin Hood?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that had.
That's right, I remember, because they mentioned that in the what's-his-name book that you gave me last year, where they go to the Robin Hood convention.
Oh, yeah. Whiffle Leave It Fall.
That's it.
By Bob Fisher.
Yeah.
And that's the bloke.
While you've been reviewing that, I have just composed a haiku from the viewpoint of Black Shuck, which runs, "No one ever asks me, is your heart also huge, burning bright and black as pitch?"
Ooh.
Black Shuck is sensitive.
He is. That's just one of those interesting
things. Are you saying Black Shuck was only like that because no one petted him on the head, called him a good boy and played with him, took him for walks and stuff like that?
I'm just saying, when you look at an enormous burning hellhound that left a scorch mark in a church door, you have to ask yourself, what were the parents doing?
Sure, it's funny you say that. There also are apparently like plenty of legends of Black Shuck as like a protector figure. Helping out travellers in woods and stuff.
Yeah.
Because he's just a good boy, he just wants pets.
Black Shuck, the only British folk demon that can be tamed with snackles.
So I think for the most part this is a very good book and I enjoy it. I think the only kind of niggle I have is a lot of the chapters also sort of tie it into modern day depictions of these folklore. So you get things like the Tolkien and the Harry Potter series and things like that. And sometimes that's good and insightful. Like there was a bit with the fairies. So there was one story called The Legend of Tamlin, where it's about a woman who kind of sleeps with an elfin knight only to find that he's actually a human. He's been forced into the fairy's service. Mm. And so she, you know, rescues him and they go off and get married. And then there was a bit about the Scots Macaw, Liz Lockheed, and that's apparently the Scottish equivalent of the poet laureate. She did a poem basically comparing that to like a man who's trapped in a marriage to sort of a middle-aged woman he doesn't love more anymore, yeah. Kind of having an affair with a much younger lady. Like, that's interesting. That's like an interesting new way to look at this.
Mm.
But then other parts are just like, mention, you know, Grendel and him being like an embodiment of nature's wild nature, I guess. And then next paragraph is, it was also a movie of Beowulf. Moving on.
Yeah, we don't talk about that.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think it's in these things where it is just more of like a straight adaptation rather than a reinterpretation.
Mm.
It just feels a bit like it doesn't really add anything to the conversation.
Yeah.
It's interesting because there was a book I read years ago when everyone was doing all of the nice stuff about fairies and everyone was going, oh, fairies, aren't they so lovely? Mm. Pratchett did Lords and Ladies. And I remember from that, he had fairies are terrific. They beget terror. Fairies are fantastic. They create fantasies. No one ever said fairies were nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's another thing we like is the thing that they mention in the fairies chapter, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Yeah.
Ooh. All right.
Because that's a very like creepy, otherworldly fairy.
Yes.
There was another book, though, that was out around kind of the, I think it was the late 80s, early 90s, by an author called Raymond D. Feist called Fairy Tale.
Mm.
Spelled F-A-E-R-I-E, and it was about kind of an American-Irish family, and they've got twin boys, and one of them gets taken away to the world of fairies, and his twin brother, he basically is given a stone from a river with a hole in it,
yeah,
ties it around his neck, and he basically travels around the hill, the fairy mound, 9 times to the anti-fairy world and rescue his brother. So it's very kind of old school.
Mm.
Which was interesting because you don't really see that these days.
You see very few fairies at all these days, to be honest.
Not much, except I think people still work with them or work around them. In Ireland, quite famously, yes. There's a motorway where there's a particular tree that has fairy significance, I think, something like that. And the planners were basically persuaded to move the motorway around the tree.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it would make the fairies cross.
I remember reading that and thinking, yes, if only we could do this with HS2.
It's just everything
just a matter of time,
like
Graham. The world is already crazy.
Also trying to find, there was one book they mentioned here that sounds absolutely amazing. So I will just, if someone wants to move on, I will come back to it.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Move on to Are You
One? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, so my gift from Andrew was Ayoade on Top, which is a Faber and Faber by Richard Ayoade, in which he reviews in minute detail the film View from the Top, a USA film released in March 2003, directed by Bruno Barreto.
Nope.
No idea.
And starring Gwyneth Paltrow, amongst other people that are Mark Ruffalo, the lovely Mark Ruffalo.
Yes.
Candice Bergen, Kelly Preston, Rob Lowe, Mike Myers. So there's quite a few sort of quite high profile people in it. I think at the time, I don't know whether Paltrow was that massive at the time.
Well, she'd already won her Shakespeare in Love Oscar
then.
That was late 90s.
Right,
so.
Okay. I know it was after Sliding Doors, I think. I think it was. That was the 90s, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah.
See, when you were talking about this, you got it, the first thing that popped into my head was there was an episode of 8 out of 10 Cats Do Countdown.
Uh-huh.
And Richard Ayoade was on it, and he kept trying to convince people. He kept talking about the film White Chicks.
Oh,
and
I like that film.
And he kept talking about it all the way through that episode.
interesting.
Just reviewing it and talking about how good it was and what the plot was and just breaking it all down. And this just sounds like he's taking it to the next level.
I do like White Chicks. I mean, you have like a nice warm, toasty feeling about the Wayans brothers in general. But I know that like they're not exactly... They don't tend to garner critical acclaim.
Yeah,
but White Chicks, it's a guilty pleasure.
White Chicks' Oscar campaign
was very mishandled, I thought.
It's like me with George of the Jungle. I love George of the Jungle.
Oh,
you know.
And I have seen this film. I saw it at the time, or a bit after maybe, and I can't quite remember it, strangely. But Richard Ayoade... throughout the book, there's references to how many thousands of times he's seen it. So I guess he's a little bit obsessed with it, and it must be kind of a guilty pleasure, despite the fact that, you know, this is not the most sort of intellectual of films. It's very simplistic as a rom-com. But there's obviously something to be derived from it, and he mercilessly takes the mick out of it throughout.
Mm.
In Proustian detail. So if I can, it's basically the story of a girl who starts off, she lives on a trailer park with a parent who doesn't really care about her. And she has a dream of, you know, she looks up at the sky and wants to be something to do with flying or an air hostess, I think. And there's this. What's that film with the red balloon?
Is it just called The Red Balloon?
I think it's just called The Red Balloon. Yeah. They have that in the beginning, and just the way he talks about it, it's like he's reviewing the French original. But it's just a kid who like releases a balloon, and it's her. You know, there's a training montage which he repeatedly acknowledges is a keystone of an important film like this. And it's about her journey towards being an air hostess, and there's sort of the world's most famous air hostess, and there's sort of the world's most famous air hostess. How did that become a thing? But that is Candice Bergen, who she very much admires, and from Bergen's life, she realizes that it's not just about how good an air hostess are, but also, you know, what you give to the procedure, what you give of yourself, and how much you can grow as a result of being an air hostess.
Yes, it's a calling being an air hostess.
It's a calling. It is, yes.
Rob is demonstrating where the emergency exits are right now, I think.
But just on the website.
I just have one question.
Carry on.
Who's Candice Bergen? Why do I know that name?
She was like, she had her own series, Murphy Brown, in the 80s, 90s.
Oh, right, yes. Like
wasn't she married to Louis Malle or someone
was
else?
Was she really?
I think so. Let me just look that up.
Oh, please, wiki that. I've gone, really? Wow, that's amazing.
You almost made ultrasonic. When you do the dog whistle.
The little bat squeak, yes. Yes, on according to her Wikipedia page, on September 27th, 1980, she married French film director Louis Malle. The couple was married until Malle's death from cancer on Thanksgiving Day in 1995.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And she was also fantastic in Miss Congeniality, which remains a great film to this day.
She's had a hell of a career.
Just as a way that, just to illustrate how Ayoade writes about air hostesses, the Gwyneth Paltrow character, Donna Jensen, the female protagonist, she has a couple of males around her, and she has to sort of, you know, evaluate each male as a potential partner, as per rom-com territory. And Ayoade writes, "Here's a man who knows you've got the juice, but isn't going to bang on about what an absolute knockout you are before giving a tip of his hat to your glorious grey matter. Sure, you're a 10, a dime, a babe. But the first thing that struck our man when he saw you in that tight dress as you walked towards him in slow motion while the camera tilted up from your high heels fully taking in any movement that happened to occur twixt hips and hair flick, was that tremendous brain of yours. There, he said to himself, is a bonce for the ages. This woman's an all-round intellect. I can't fault her spatial perception, and she seems strong linguistically, kinesthetically, and administratively. There's like footnotes as well. It's such a great read.
Sorry, weirdly enough, it felt like you were channeling Ayoade.
I can hear his voice.
Is he like your spirit guide?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh my god. If Richard Ayoade was my spirit guide, maybe life would make more sense.
Yes.
That's almost a good segue, is that I have found that book I was thinking of.
Ooh.
Oh.
It is the first novel in Malcolm Price's series of Welsh noir novels, Aberystwyth Mon Amour.
Nice.
Which is set in an alternate Wales. Where our hero Die Brain Box has to stop the evil wizard Love Spoon from raising a lost city from the sea.
Hang on, the evil wizard what?
Love Spoon.
Die Brain Box sounds like something you'd have in like a really cheap sci-fi film.
Yes.
It did. I mean, it of course immediately reminded me of Cinema Eclectic segment Die Impossible.
Yes.
Welsh secret agent.
Ayoade intersperses his talk about the film with little insights into his own family history. And he says about his dad, his favourite food was raw onion. I would frequently have to bring him raw onion slices as a snack, which meant I began to associate my dad's hunger with crying. So this book, yes, very much worth a read. He says about it, my modest aim is that it delights, entertains and reconfigures the relationship between you and the universe. I hope you have the humility to receive it.
Good books all around, it seems.
Yes, I think we've all had a pretty good Christmas, and now Rob is going to ruin New Year for us, right?
Well, we have the authority on New Age things here.
Yes.
Thank you.
Compared to us three, the authority.
Well.
I've discovered this site. It's amazing, called the New Age Bullshit Generator, right? And just a click of a button will give you words of wisdom. What wisdom? I'm not sure. So I'm going to put things to you guys and see if you guys can interpret it yourselves. Give us your own interpretation of what this means. So,
I'm a big fan of a generator. I do like a generator.
Oh, I love a good generator. Yeah.
So starting with the first one, this is a doozy. Consciousness consists of ultrasonic energy of quantum energy. Quantum means a redefining of the infinite.
That's lovely. That's very beautiful and personally meaningful to me. In the fact that amidst all this chaos, there is some form to be had. I think it's very, very reassuring.
So
what you're saying is there's harmonious vibrations between your ultrasonic consciousness quantum waves.
I think that's what we're all thinking.
I think, as Keanu Reeves famously said, it's quantum, baby. Yes.
And of course, if you didn't like that one, by Ang, you quantum realigner, only $299.99.
Yes. Available from Goop now.
Yeah, we're getting in on that Goop business. We've seen they've got a Netflix series, and we think we've done about enough harm in the world to qualify for that status as well by now, I think.
Okay. We exist, we dream, we are reborn. Potential is a constant. To embark on the story is to become one with it.
Is this an 80s power ballad lyric generator now?
Can you say that again?
We exist, we dream, we are reborn. Potential is a constant. To embark on the story is to become one with it.
You're the
best. That's great.
You're right, it works.
I love that. I love the fact that it focuses on the journey, not the destiny.
See, the joint you're holding is a big enough.
You're bulletproof. There's nothing you can say that'll get it to admit that that's nonsense. I'll give up now.
Okay, let's try this one. Self-actualization requires exploration. Choice is a constant. Empathy is the deeper meaning of understanding and of us.
I think that's just a logical statement, isn't it?
I think I got lost halfway through. I've got to admit.
Well, that's the exploration you need to do to self-actualize, is make your way to the end of that statement.
My first question was, what is self-actualization?
When you are at one with who you truly are meant to be as a being, not just as a human, but as a complete, with all that that implies.
Are you sure you didn't make this site?
I think all of us genuinely are our own.
Also, what happens if you self-actualize and who you truly deeply are is a bit of a shit?
Then that's your manifest destiny in this lifetime.
Oh boy, manifest destiny is a worrying phrase to use in this context.
Exactly. Okay. Let's try again. Today, science tells us that the essence of nature is serenity. We exist as chaos-driven reactions. The stratosphere is buzzing with ultrasonic energy.
Yeah.
Oh, stratosphere is buzzing, mate.
Is that what science tells us?
So this is the thing with science, with nature in general. It does continue. It persists. There's nothing you can seem to do to nature to get it to just stop. And yet we feel that that is chaotic, but it's not.
That's what
it is. It is deeply serene.
Like
it will
that,
continue.
That if you build your mead hall on the edge of the woods, Grendel will come and kill all the lords.
I'll be honest. What I was watching a nature documentary where three female lions took down an antelope and started eating it. Mm. That didn't seem very serene to me.
It's just, if you take a step back from that, that is what they are meant to do. That's their reason for being. That's their reason for eating and killing and hunting. They just survive. And that's just nature. To an outsider, it looks...
You're in the wrong job, Sarah. You are totally wasted on whatever job you're doing right now.
Counterpoint. When I look into the eyes of a bear, I see no kinship there. Just a cold, half-bored interest in food.
Oh. You should have a Kinski generator.
Okay. Intuition is the driver of ecstasy. The goal of superpositions of possibilities is to plant the seeds of inseparability rather than dogma. We exist as bioelectricity.
Yes, but if we did that, our lives would be so short. It's such a... Like, you're burning bright as a flame in that moment, but it cannot last. You can't continue through over several years like that. You're going to burn yourself out.
You know, you definitely need a job in like a fortune cookie factory or something like that.
This is riveting. I'm not sure I've seen a battle of intellects like this in all of my born days.
Yes, it's certainly unlike anything we have seen before.
I mean, you know when you're a kid and you say something to one of your mates, you go, "Shield!" Yeah. That's Sarah right now. Oh, wow. I'm not sure how to get through this shield.
I will say also, taking some ecstasy with Adam Driver and then planting some seeds does sound like a fun afternoon.
Especially if superpositions are involved.
Yes.
Superpositions with Adam Driver. Oh.
Yep. Adam Driver's bioelectric superposition is going to be my band name.
Oh, right, okay. To roam the circuit is to become one with it. You and I are messengers of the solar system. This life is nothing short of a deepening rekindling of spatial non-locality.
Oh, that's true in anybody's existence.
It's like immediate.
We are stardust. We are reconfigurations of the universe. All elements of the universe are within ourselves.
Hang on. I'm going to have to cry foul. We sent you that copy of Hair to review, and now you're just quoting the lyrics.
Look, I'm providing a rational argument for this. I mean, have I smoked POT for 7 straight weeks? Maybe. But what I'm saying is there is always a way through. We can be at one with our pathways.
Oh, wow.
Spatial non-locality.
Love it. It's mathematical, isn't it? Exciting.
Andrew seems quite taken aback at the power of this new age bullshit.
So the thing in space that, like, isn't actually... Is that a black hole?
It's
black holes is what it's saying.
It's kind of like Schrodinger in its...
Hang on, are we talking about Schrodinger or the cat?
No, the space.
Schrodinger is
so
space.
So it either is or is not space, but simultaneous.
I'm confused now.
Yeah, well, welcome to our world, really.
I changed my mind. I hate
if we think
segment.
Of space as an object rather than as an emptiness.
Oh, God. She's twisted my melon, man.
Be grateful you have a melon to twist.
Yeah, that's good follow-up, actually. Can we do this with Sean Ryder lyrics?
All right, okay, one last one. You and I are seekers of the multiverse. This life is nothing short of an awakening fount of non-local balance. To engage with the vision quest is to become one with it.
That's the third time you've said that.
I know. See, it's a bullshit generator, so obviously there's going to be some things that contradict with other
there's
things.
There's pegs on the washing line.
This one definitely has its like show phrases it likes to repeat.
Yeah.
Oh no, it's got a great follow-up line. Wanderer, look within and ground yourself. Tell yourself not to go out. You're not allowed any pocket money.
No, grounding is an essential part of exploring the universe.
Go ground yourself is my new go-to insult.
But how can you explore the universe when you're told you're not allowed out of your bedroom?
No, that's not... You go even further when you ground yourself. The more you ground yourself, the wider you can explore.
Listen, as if you can hear that noise, it is someone's motorbike and not just a loud aspirin that we're blowing with this stuff.
Oh, wow. So I think we've come to a natural conclusion.
I think we can, well, Sarah can go some further, but the rest of us...
I was going to say, haven't we just begun?
Okay, mercy. I'm done. I can't handle it. And I'm the one who proposed this. Oh, wow. The lesson here, listeners, is never challenge Sarah to New Age stuff. You will lose.
I'm so confused. I've become one with like 7 different things.
I did enjoy the mention of multiverse there. It's always useful to acknowledge.
I liked that because that's a comic book thing.
Still just thinking about Adam Driver, to be honest.
And why fair not?
It made me think of Red Dwarf in the backwards universe.
Well.
Yeah. I think we've basically reached the end of the show.
I think so, yes.
So, as always, all of our episodes are available on any podcast provider. They're also on our site where you can find all sorts of other stuff. Rob's just started a new column about video games and his... Well, basically his life with games.
Yeah.
And how they've affected his perception. Yeah, his first article is on the website, which is all about Alex Kidd. That's a new thing that we're doing. And we've been making a few other changes as we go along in the first few months of this year. But until next time, I've been Rob.
I've been Graham.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Sarah.
Seamless.
Yes.
For the first time.
The first time ever.
It's much better when you can actually see who's going to talk.
We'll see you all later.
Enjoy your journey, traveller.
Oh, go ground yourself.